Welcome to the Spectre Sisters, your portal into the unexplainable,
the unknown,
and the undeniably strange.
Whether you're a skeptic, unbeliever, or just along for the ride, Spectre Sisters is your go-to hub for everything weird, wild, and wonderfully unexplained.
So light a candle, keep your mind open, and remember, not everything strange is supernatural.
But some of it just might be.
Welcome to the Spectre Sisters, your portal into the unexplainable,
the unknown,
and the undeniably strange. On this episode of Coffee and Case Files, we will take a peek into the missing persons case, the Springfield Three. On June 6th, graduates Suzanne Susie Streeter and Stacy McCall took the stage to accept their high school diploma from Kickapoo High School in Springfield, Missouri at 4 p.m. Cheryl Levitt was also in attendance to celebrate her daughter, Stacy. Graduation day is usually filled with love and the start of a beautiful chapter in life. Unfortunately, this was not the case for these three women. The last known sighting of Streeter and McCall was at around 2 in the morning on June 7th. The girls had been invited to the high school's alcohol-free lock-in celebration, but declined the invitation, opting to attend some graduation parties held by their peers instead. Janelle Kirby, a good friend of the girls, invited Levitt to dinner with her family. Levitt declined and instead planned to meet up after dinner. Kathy Kirby, Janelle's mom, commented later, "If Levitt wanted to get a hold of Susie, she knew exactly where to call. We had told her to call us if she needed to get a hold of Susie. Our phones did not ring one time." After taking pictures, eating cake, and receiving a new Cocker Spaniel puppy as a graduation gift, McCall left her home and headed to Kirby's house. Pictures were taken later that evening by Streeter at the Del Mar residence with her friend Nigel Kinney before heading home as well. The trio had planned that night to drive to a Branson motel to spend the night, then meet up with friends at Whitewater. McCall's mother advised against this plan in fear of a car accident due to alcohol. Stacy promises her mom that she will call her, while Streeter promises to call Nigel Kinney the morning of June 7th so they can meet at White River. The girls were partying with Janelle Kirby's neighbors in Battlefield before changing plans and instead carpooling to other parties in the Springfield area. At around 10 p.m., Stacy calls her mother, Janice, informing her of the changing plans, saying, "Mom, don't worry, we're not going to Branson tonight." Janice states that a new plan was in place with the understanding that between 8 and 8:30 a.m. the next morning, everyone would get together to go to Whitewater. Levitt was last heard from at approximately 11:15 p.m. on June 6th, where she called a friend to talk to her supposedly painting and varnishing her bedroom armoire.
Their last party took place at the residence of Michelle Elder, a friend of McCall's. This party was broken up by the Springfield police at 1:50 a.m. The girls returned to Kirby's house in Battlefield at around 2 a.m. Michelle stated she had wanted to rekindle her friendship with Stacy and made plans the evening of June 8th in hopes of doing so. Girls had wanted to stay at Kirby's house that night, but seeing as her house was full of out-of-town relatives for her graduation, Streeter and McCall instead decided to head to 1717 East Del Mar, which was Levitt's house, for the night. Janelle's mother had overheard the pair talking as they left her house. Streeter allegedly told McCall to follow her to her house. McCall replied with simple, "Okay, I will." The investigation shows that the two girls more than likely made it to the house that night, seeing as their outfits, jewelry, purses, as well as the car they used that night were all accounted for inside the home. The following day, at around 9 in the morning, Kirby and her boyfriend Mike Henson decided to visit the house after Streeter and McCall failed to show up to Kirby's house for their planned trip to Whitewater. "I was starting to get worried because Stacy, she's so responsible and so Susie," said Kirby. "I know they wouldn't just take off without telling us they weren't going to Whitewater." When Kirby arrived at the house, she found the front door to be unlocked and let herself in. After searching the residence, she could not locate Streeter, McCall, or Levitt, but she saw that their cars were still parked just outside. She also informed police of a shattered glass lampshade on the front porch. The light bulb, however, was fully untouched. Kirby's boyfriend, Henson, innocently had cleaned up the glass, not knowing he could have potentially damaged evidence. Henson defended this action because Kirby was barefoot and he didn't want her stepping on the glass. The neighbor and friend, Nigel Kenny, reported to officers that it was out of the ordinary for Street to not park in her usual spot, saying she was a creature of habit, and that she was very particular about always parking in the same spot. He thought it was possible that someone else could have parked her car that night. Meanwhile, inside the house, Kirby found the family dog Cinnamon, a Yorkshire Terrier, very visibly agitated. As Kirby was leaving the residence, she answered a very disturbing call from an unidentified male who was making sexual innuendos. Kirby hung up quickly before receiving another call with the same pretenses. She found the calls to be very jarring, especially because she recalled Streeter claiming that she had experienced the same problem since she had moved in with Levitt in the spring of 1992.
According to Springfield Police Officer David Asher, the calls were obscene. The individual would not identify himself. They were using the F word and several other words, and she just hung up the phone. The phone immediately rang again. Obscene phone call again. Click. It's over with, states Asher. Meanwhile, Janice had some friends who happened to work at Whitewater who confirmed Skeeter and McCall never visited the water park. Janice had tried to contact Stacy multiple times with no answer, so she headed to the house in a panic to investigate. Once inside the Delmar residence, the dog Cinnamon came barreling towards her. The dog was in there just going crazy, just yipping and crying, Janice explained. She also took note that seemingly all of the girl's belongings were neat and completely untouched. This included $900 worth of cash from Levitt's place of work. Levitt and Streeter's unfinished pack of cigarettes were found inside the house, which seemed out of place. This was considered unusual because Levitt's friends and family referred to her as a chain smoker. The television in Streeter's room was just showing snow, which suggested the girls had started a movie that night. Janice called the police in a state of panic from the home phone to report the girls as missing. After her call, she noticed a very strange message, which she listened to. This message was unfortunately erased after her playthrough of it, which wasn't uncommon during this time. This voicemail could have easily contained a clue into the girls' disappearances. The police believed the message was not connected to any of the previously reported prank calls that Kirby had answered. 16 hours after the girls were last seen, McCall's parents contacted the police, as well as various other friends and family. These people also showed up to the house to conduct their own searches, which ended up corrupting the crime scene. The police officers estimated that anywhere from 10 to 20 people had been inside the house. These people also emptied ashtrays and cleaned coffee cups and were tidying up the house. When I arrived, the first thing I noticed were several people in the yard. The door was open and people were coming and going from inside the house, police officer Rick Bookout stated. The officers found no clear signs of any struggle, excluding the broken lampshade. On December 31st, 1992, a man called the hotline for America's Most Wanted with supposed information into the women's disappearances. Unfortunately, this call became disconnected when the operator tried to link the call up with the Springfield investigators. The police said the caller claimed to have prime knowledge of the abductions and urged him to contact them. They never got a call back.
Investigators received a tip that the women's bodies were buried in the foundations of the south parking garage at Cox Hospital. In 2007, Rick Norland scanned the garage with a ground-penetrating radar and uncovered three anomalies that possibly resembled human bodies. The parking garage began construction in September of 1993, which would have been after the girls were first reported missing. But without any reasonable belief, the Springfield police declined to further investigate, saying the tip provided no evidence or logical reasoning behind this theory at the time or since then. They continued by stating, "Digging up the area and subsequently reconstructing the structure would be extremely costly, and without any reasonable belief that the bodies could be located there, it is illogical to do so. And for those reasons, SPD does not intend to. Investigations have determined this lead to not be credible. The tip reportedly came from someone who either claimed to be psychic or claimed to have a dream or vision about the case," police said. Other suspects included Susie's ex-boyfriend Dustin Rekla, who was caught breaking into a Springfield mausoleum to steal $30 worth of gold fillings from a skull. This took place a few months before the girls disappeared, but Dustin's friends provided an alibi for him, even though they stated they were in the same area as the girls the night they vanished. Another suspect is Larry Dwayne Hall, a theorized serial killer who traveled the Midwest to attend historical reenactments. He is believed to have assaulted and murdered dozens of women. This theory was plausible, seeing as Wilson's Creek National Battlefield was located just 5 minutes from the Kirby's home. There also happened to be two battle reenactments taking place in the morning and afternoon of June 6th, 1992. Even after the FBI became involved, the killer never admitted to who was killed, just that the killings took place during the months of March, June, August, and September between 1980 and 1994.
Hi friends, Amy here, producer and host of The Activity Continues, a podcast where we delve into haunted houses, spooky stories, and things that go bump in the night. Each episode, I'm joined by Megan, who is hilarious, and is also the first one to nope out if anything ghosty happens. We recap episodes of The Dead Files, and we also tell creepy listener stories and talk to real-life ghost hunters and mediums, as well as some Dead Files clients. It's spooky, it's funny, it's occasionally unhinged, but it's always a good time. So, if you're into haunted history, ghost stories, and just the right amount of nonsense, grab your favorite beverage and come hang out with us, where the activity continues.
In 1997, convicted kidnapper and robber Robert Craig Cox claimed to know of three women that were murdered and buried and that their bodies would never be recovered. Cox was living in Springfield in 1992. His girlfriend, however, corroborated it could not have been done by Cox because they attended church that morning. She later took back her statement and told police that Cox had told her to say that. However, Cox's parents stepped forward saying he was at their house the night of the disappearances. Later on, Cox told journalists that he would disclose what happened to the three women after his own mother died.
I want to say the ex-boyfriend did it.
You think really? The ex-boyfriend okay. did it?
I think that's really sus. Why are you stealing $30 worth of gold true. Fillings out
Dustin.
Of a mausoleum?
But what about the guy? I mean, the last guy literally said, though, that he can't disclose information until his own mother dies.
He
about the three women.
What?
Also yeah. be just a little like kind of psychotic.
Maybe.
Like maybe
good old
he's,
Tommy Knuckles.
Yeah, because why else?
But
like,
he did live there during that time.
Yeah.
He lived there during that time. It would line up that hospital being built.
Oh yeah, all of it. All of it. He said that their bodies would never be found.
Yeah.
And then him telling his girlfriend that they went to church and then her being like, no, I said that, but I said it for him because he told me to.
I'm thinking maybe he was just doing sus stuff in general.
Yeah, but he mentioned three women specifically.
He did. But they also, the case was public, right? Was it?
Yes.
I mean, like that they had been missing or whatever.
I don't know how it's public.
Possible
though. I'm not sure.
The only reason I'm saying this is because I think it was the serial killer just because of the context of the reenactments and everything like that. And just him sort of being in that area. I feel like that, you know, fits the MO and everything like that. And I that's why I'm thinking maybe Robert is just, he's kind of seen, you know, that this is an ongoing case and maybe he's a little skitzy himself.
He's in
and he's like, jail. Oh, it was me.
He's in jail for kidnapping and robbery.
Okay, yeah, so it is possible, but
it's just weird.
Sometimes people like to take credit for things,
that's
too.
That's true.
Like when they have a weird ego, like.
Yeah, it's just weird about the alibis and stuff.
Yeah, that is weird.
I'm not sure because, he's in jail currently. And then the ex-boyfriend, it's the whole case is awful.
Yeah.
Like the one broken lampshade and then that getting swept up because she wasn't wearing shoes, so I had to sweep it up. Excuse
like,
me?
Sweet that you want to take care of your girlfriend, but tell her to go back out to the car if she's not wearing shoes.
Yeah. Also, just like leave when it's a crime scene.
Yeah.
So that they can like get the evidence they need.
I know. And then there being up to 20 people.
Yeah. Where'd they all come?
I don't know. Why? And all being that, like, trust me, I'm nosy. I'm not nosy enough to go in and start cleaning everything.
Yeah. That's like almost deliberate in a way. Cause it's like, why would you, like, how is that many people I don't know.
That's
like not having the common sense to be like, hey, maybe we should let the police deal with this and not like sweep everything up.
What makes me think that the ex-boyfriend did it?
Oh, and then maybe people were trying to cover for him or something.
Yeah, maybe
that knew him.
Mm. I think all of the suspects are likely in their own ways, and I hope someday we find out what happened to those girls.
Right, because there's nothing. Absolutely. And then the whole thing with the tip, with the person who called in the tip, and that was like,
they're like
going to tell them.
Yeah.
No, not even too, though. So the person that called in the tip and then disconnected whenever they were sending it to the police, I wonder if that was who it was. And they were going to, like, because, you know, a lot of serial killers will tell on themselves in a way, and they will put themselves in the investigation.
BTK?
Literally. But this one was, they were about to connect him to the investigate, and that's, like, you know, he's probably got scared.
Yeah, I'm wondering, or if, like, he was being threatened or something, too. Maybe. He did have a tip, but then something happened where he was like, I shouldn't, because
Maybe. It's just weird that, like, within that phone call, like, he disconnected and never once called back.
Never once.
And then with the person who reported having it in a dream, what's crazy about that is when they reported it was like still back in the 90s, and they searched in 2007 and found three body-shaped anomalies.
So it like kind of actually was true.
So that's weird too.
Which, circling back to Robert, they'll never find the girls' bodies. They would have to demolish that building to get those out.
That's why I was thinking maybe him, because they'll never find it. Like, he was so convinced that like it's so far gone, because he knew the police probably wouldn't spend the money to destroy. You would have to like fully destroy it. So this was someone, if it is them there, this is someone who had knowledge of that sort of thing and like really smart. Which, for robberies, you do have to case places.
You do.
And scheme things like that. So I don't know.
You also have to be clever to kidnap.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So.
It's an insane story.
Yeah, I don't even know who I think would be the most likely.
It's, yeah.
They all, in their own ways.
Yeah.
They all work together, final answer, with the aliens.
With the aliens.
I'm under attack. See, it's always
aliens.
Yeah.
Aliens abducted the girls.
Yes, that is.
They had to have.
Yeah, no. Yeah, the Springfield 3 is a crazy case. I've heard about it before, but, man, to, like, really, like, sit and think about it and mull over all of these, it changes your perspective on it.
Oh, yeah. Like, they were just graduating, and all three of them, and then for the car to be slightly off, too, is crazy. Because the neighbor was like, oh, I noticed that, like, she always parked in one particular spot. And for this, the first time in ever, it was not parked in that spot. So he like even said that he theorized that it probably wasn't her that parked it.
Okay.
So like it could have even been then. Like, it's insane. Like, was it the family?
That could possibly explain like everybody going in and cleaning up everything after the fact.
And making sure there was nothing, and why like this TV was still on, all the SIGs were there, there was no sign of anything. So part of me could almost see, and like, all due respect to the family, and I'm so sorry that this happened, and if this isn't true, I don't mean any harm, but it is odd that like it seemed as though nothing was amiss. Nothing. Like, they even noted that, like, all their clothes were folded neatly and stuff, and used makeup wipes were there and everything. So they got home and they got settled.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I almost wonder if they would have obviously let family in that night.
They would. Yeah, because you said, like, it was just the one broken lamp or something like that. That kind of.
And it was graduation. It's like maybe
possibly somebody that they knew, so it wasn't like someone was breaking in that they didn't know, and there was more, like, more of a commotion.
The way that lamp could have been broken, because it's a porch light, correct?
Yes.
Think about, like, when you get thrown over somebody's shoulder.
Yeah.
How your legs are up in the air.
Yeah.
She could have been kicking and fighting and kicked the lamp, and that's how it broke.
That's true, because then you wouldn't be touching anything around you because you're too high up. Maybe.
Yeah.
I could see that. It's just,
yeah.
I wonder if it was, because, like, everyone had family in town that weekend, and maybe someone got too drunk. And to cover it up, they just said, go big or go home. Pretty much.
It was all three of them, though, too.
It was all three. Like, yeah, so the mom,
kind of crazy.
Yeah, the mom, her daughter, and best friend.
Yeah, because if it was an accident, then you know, you'd think maybe it was like one of them, but I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
it's crazy.
I don't know.
I don't think it could be one person.
No.
Not for three people with no signs of struggle. It's crazy.
No, yeah.
Unless they knew the person, they're like, oh, hey, I'm going to go do this, and I want you guys to come with me. And the mom's like, well, she's not my kid, so I'm going to go with you guys.
Yeah.
For, like, protection purposes and get lured away.
Yeah.
Yeah, because for three, like you said, for three of them with no struggle, like, you know, if one saw something happening, then, like,
And it had to be at the house because everything was there. Every jewelry, every dollar is crazy. $900 in cash sitting there.
I definitely think, like, the three of them had to have been taken to a second location.
It had to. There's no way.
Like, they went with somebody that they trusted.
Yeah, because it was, like, confirmed. Yeah. Everything was confirmed up until the house. And when they got in the house, everything is there. Mm-hmm. Everything. Like, the smokes. Like, they even noted, like, a open bottle of, like, Coke and, like, just everything. All the makeup wipes. It was clearly, like, done. I mean, I think, and I didn't put this in my research, but I think, oddly enough, the only other thing that was kind of missing, which is gross, was one of the girls' pairs of underwear, which is odd, but also some people just don't like wearing underwear, so sometimes, you don't know.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, I don't know. That was odd. She, like, briefly mentioned it when I was researching, but I don't... It might not have anything to do with it, because everything else was pristine.
And there's a dog. Dogs are known for freaking out, chewing underwear.
That's true.
And completely eating them sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the dog was freaking out.
Yeah.
So like, everyone that saw Cinnamon was like, wow. Like, she came barreling towards me.
I think it was Cinnamon.
Oh. She ate them. She ate them, and
she
Robert
went werewolf
saw.
Mode, and yeah.
Robert saw
she
the
went
dog
dog man mode.
Dog man.
Cinnamon's dog man confirmed.
Yeah, Cinnamon is dog man confirmed. It's just such a crazy case. I have no, like... It feels like an episode of Black Mirror, where everywhere that you turn, every corner that you look into, there's no answers. There's nothing. And it has, like, it, but then there's, like, such prime suspects, but it almost can't be them unless it was all of them together type of thing.
Which, that'd be such a weird,
like,
trio.
A little, yeah, like, because the one serial killer, allegedly, like, he isn't even from the area. He just happened to be at reenactments. And then it's weird. Is crazy. I do think it probably was someone they trusted.
Yeah. For there not to be struggle, I'm sure.
Yeah. Or they were, like, out front for whatever reason, but that wouldn't make sense because the TV was on as if they were, like, watching. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Maybe they heard something outside and the mom's like, I'm going to go check, but the girls followed.
Maybe. Wait, guys, guys, I know.
Oh.
Aliens.
Yeah.
That's what it's gotta be.
Yeah.
It's always
they beamed
aliens.
Him up, Scotty.
They did beam him up, Scotty. They
said they were Scotty.
Robert is an alien.
Robert is a very alien name. Robert Cox. Yeah.
And that's why no one knows where he was.
Mm-hmm.
The sky.
Yeah.
He was literally
the sky.
He was in the sky. He won't tell until his parents are dead because his parents don't know he's an alien.
Mm-hmm. He's got to protect that reputation.
Ooh, changeling.
Holds the keys to D&D.
Excuse me?
I have no idea.
What the actual crap?
Why did that sound like it came from somewhere else?
It did.
The mic said no, not
the
today.
Mic did it, yeah,
the mic said, I'm not doing this today. It quit on the spot.
It did.
Let us know in the comments below what you think happened to the Springfield 3. Because I, for one, us for three, have no idea.
Three for all
for one. We're the three musketeers. Well, thank you for listening. Spook you next time.
Welcome to the Spectre Sisters, your portal into the unexplainable,
the unknown,
and the undeniably strange.
Whether you're a skeptic, a believer, or just along for the ride, Spectre Sisters is your go-to hub for everything weird, wild, and wonderfully unexplained.
So light a candle, keep your mind open, and remember, not everything strange is supernatural.
But some of it just might be.